On Friday, August 2nd, we wrapped up a very busy week by first talking to Quinnipiac University Law Professor Bill Dunlap about the latest development in a case tied to the 2012 Sandy Hook School massacre. Our new host here at WICC 600, Lisa Wexler, checked in the 3 p.m. hour. 5 p.m. hour, we got some thoughts from Stratford GOP State Senator Kevin Kelly on the UConn bailout to help them get out of the American Athletic Conference. And we also had some animal news. Wanted to get back into the legal gun morass, as we do from time to time. And again, we had a legal move yesterday, not completely out of the ordinary, but still can use a little interpretation here. It goes back to the 2012 Sandy Hook massacre. And in this, Remington Arms, who made that gun that was used in the Sandy Hook shooting, has appealed a state ruling to the U.S. Supreme Court. And to help us make a little sense out of all of this that was not unexpected, we welcome back once again one of our go-to guys, constitutional law professor Bill Dunlap, Quinnipiac University. Bill, how are you?
Just fine. How are you doing?
Good, Bill. Good. Well, you saw what happened yesterday. Remington appealing a state ruling to the Supreme Court. What was that ruling, and what is their goal here, do you think?
Well, back in March, the Connecticut Supreme Court held that the Sandy Hook parents' lawsuit against the manufacturers and some of the sellers of the gun could go forward. It's a highly technical dispute. It has to do with a conflict between a federal law that protects the gun manufacturers and a state law that protects the public against unfair trade practices. And the courts are going to have to decide which one prevails in this case.
So the Connecticut Supreme Court, it was a tight vote. It was 4-3. But now they're appealing this, Remington is, directly to the Supreme Court. Now, would Remington have, correct me if I'm wrong, Bill, if my verbiage is wrong here, but could the Supreme Court have a final say on this matter? Is that what Remington's looking for?
Yes. If Remington won this at the United States Supreme Court, that would pretty much end the case.
What if they lost? What might the court say if they lost this whole thing or ruled in favor or let stand the ruling by the Connecticut Supreme Court? What do you think the reasoning would be there if they did that?
Well, the United States Supreme Court takes only about 5% of the cases that are brought to it by this route. It's called a writ of certiorari, and it's the person or the party that lost below asking the Supreme Court to exercise its discretion to take a case. And the court does not often exercise its discretion. There are a few things that might make it more likely for the court to take a case. And one of the things that Remington's arguing in this case is that there's a split between the circuits as to exactly what this federal law means, and also that there's a split between the state of Connecticut and the Second Circuit Court of Appeals, which is a federal court. Connecticut is in that Second Circuit, mm-hmm. And so when there's a split between a state court and the circuit where it sits, the court will often take that as well. But it's not entirely clear that it's enough of a conflict to urge the court to take the case.
So again, and Bill, we've seen this, and the guest is Bill Dunlap from Quinnipiac University Law School, professor of constitutional law. And I think we've seen this, Bill, in dramatizations of what the court does behind closed doors and when they meet in their chambers. They actually discuss this, and they have a vote on this, right? Don't they just vote among the justices whether or not to take this?
Yeah, they'll take a vote and to get an idea, a preliminary idea, of who's in favor of taking the case and who's not. In fact, in a case like this, this is a writ of certiorari, as I mm-hmm. mentioned, and this is simply asking the court to take the case. So it only takes four justices on the court in order for the court to take
it. Oh, so it doesn't even take a majority. Wow.
That's right. But that's just to take the case. It doesn't say anything about what the ultimate outcome might be.
And again, you could have, Bill, and again, you're far more versed in this than I, if they took this case, I know there's a number of things they could do. They could let go up or down either way, yes or no in favor of either side. They could let it stand. But does this case, in your mind, Bill Dunlap, have the potential impact here? Could it be a major one on gun laws in this country?
It could turn out to be fairly significant, because what it would do was allow states to enact laws dealing with the sale or the manufacture of guns that would make the gun manufacturers more liable to lawsuits like this.
So I guess this goes down to, Bill, we could bore down here, right? And this goes down to which justices, and Scalia, Antonin Scalia, the late justice, he was famous for this, which of these justices on the court, Bill, believe in federalism and original intent and you know, states' rights in a case like this, right?
Well, that's half of it. There's a dilemma here for what's usually referred to as the conservative wing of the court, although it's not entirely clear that it's all that conservative. But what they're going to have to, it's a question of gun control versus federalism, which is what you were just mentioning.
Yeah.
The federalism aspect of it suggests that maybe states ought to be able to weigh in on this. But the gun control aspect is what Congress was concerned about when it passed the federal law in the first place that was designed to protect gun manufacturers against this kind of lawsuit.
And still, we even go back to some justices, Bill, and I know Mr. Scalia was famous for saying this, that, yeah, you can have a Second Amendment, correct, so you can believe in the totality of that on one level, but there are restrictions. None of these, many of these constitutional rights, Bill, are not complete and total.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. The Heller case out of the District of Columbia that said, in fact, there is a personal right to keep and bear arms, said very, very explicitly that it is not an absolute right and that there are a number of things that states and the federal government can do to put restrictions on the ownership of guns.
Which is why it's virtually impossible for you or I to go out and get a fully automatic weapon or to have a rocket launcher and go in the backyard with something like that. Yeah, it's a personal arm, but there are limits.
That's exactly it. The court said that they can put limits on the kinds of guns that can be available, on the sort of person that can be allowed to buy a gun, thinking about felons and people with mental illness, and also on places that guns can be possessed, like courthouses, churches, public theaters.
Mm-hmm. Bill Dunlap, as always, great insights. Bill, we'll be in touch later on. Thank you so much for this. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thanks. Bill Dunlap, professor of constitutional law at Quinnipiac University in Hamden. Lisa Wexler is joining the air staff here at WICC 600, and she is with me now. Lisa, how are you?
Oh, hi. I'm great. I can't wait to come there. I'm so excited for such a host of reasons. Also, not to mention the fact that my commute will be substantially shorter, and let's face it, Paul, for so many of us, it does come down to it. Of course, for those who are listening right now, we want you in the car as long as possible because we want you to be listening to our show as long as possible.
Exactly. But yes. Come on, Lisa, everybody knows miles, and they know from gasoline and everything. So, no, that's good. Listen, your first gig is this coming Monday, 10 to noon. Perfect, right after Tony and Melissa. If people have never heard you, and you've been on the air for years at other locations around the state, tell them a little about your show.
Sure. So I like to describe my show, Paul, as a magazine without sports. I mean, I don't care that much about sports, and sports are done elsewhere. Mm-hmm. And unless it's Billie Jean King or Chris Evert, I'm really not into it.
Okay.
But I am into everything else. And that means current events, what's happening in Hartford, what's happening in our communities here in Fairfield County. I care about culture. The Richfield Playhouse and I have had a wonderful arrangement for so many years, and many of their talented performers come on the Lisa Wexler Show. Lisa Loeb will be on this Tuesday, for example.
Mm-hmm.
And I love science, and I love technology. I love innovation, new ideas, doctors who come on to explain the latest ways in which they're bringing their talents, whether they're robotically or otherwise, to making our lives better. I'm really interested in informing people of what they don't know. And the guests that I put on the show are guests that can teach me something I don't know, so that we're always learning, we're always absorbing information, and the conversation is driven by what's happening today. That's the conversation. What's happening today?
And you're so community connected in around Lower Fairfield County, Stamford, Norwalk, Darien, New Canaan, Wilton, Weston, all Ridgefield, all those areas. Hey, you're right, Lisa. Those areas have a heck of a lot going on that, you know, unless it gets picked up by a local weekly or a patch site or something about like that, people just don't know about it.
They don't, and I have to tell you, Paul, I think that that's what people care about. I think what drives people in the morning when they get up is, what are they building on the post road?
Mm-hmm.
What are they doing? What is that looking like? What's my town? How did my tax bill go up? What happened to my mill rate exactly? Is there affordable housing in the neighborhood? And if so, do I like it? Do I not like it? What do I want to know about it? Can I qualify for it? I really think these are the things that occupy people's brains to and from their life, and also health and welfare.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
But life is also about speaking with entertainers. I like to say that our audience, Paul, is focused on the community with a national horizon. You know, we have a sophisticated audience. We have an audience that cares about what's happening here and what's happening outside. And I try and bring that into the program every single day.
Yeah, and again, you're right, Lisa, because we're sometimes so bombarded with what is going on in Washington and around the world. What I try even on my show to do, and I know you try as well, you know, one of my favorite phrases here is it's not anything new, but I say to people all the time, pay attention. Okay, this is going on in Hartford. This is going on around the corner in your community. This is what's happening on 95 or 91 or whatever the roads. Pay attention. Try to get through the chafe here. Pull yourself away from Twitter from time to time and focus on what's really going on.
Yeah, I mean, for example, I've noticed this trend, Paul. You've probably started talking about it as well, but I'm really zooming in on it because I'm very interested in what's happening in local DTCs and RTCs for the November 2019 election.
Mm-hmm.
And I have noticed a trend in Shelton, in Wilton,
mm-hmm.
in Norwalk, in Westport. Very interesting that the parties of record, whether they be Democrat or Republican, in their nominating conventions are nominating unaffiliated voters to vote for positions that will be endorsed by the political party.
Yes. Yeah.
Now, that's a really interesting thing. Like, we can really get into that, Paul.
No, absolutely. And again, try and have those people on your show who,
yeah.
you know, listen, and I've made an effort here since I took this over, Lisa, to have just local people on, not necessarily when there's bad news. Like, for example, this coming Tuesday, we're having the first selectman of Trumbull on. I've had the mayor of Stratford on. We're just doing things to, hey, what's on your mind? What's going
yeah.
on? I'm not calling you because some kid got stabbed in the hallway, you know?
No. But what's your agenda? What are your priorities?
Yes.
What are the issues coming down the pike you want people to know about? Absolutely. All right. The time.
So, folks, Lisa Wexler starting this Monday. It's a shorter drive for
her. I do want to tell
yes.
you,
yes.
this is sort of a get, as we say in the business.
Yes.
I'm very excited that Linda McMahon is coming on Monday. And it's not so much about Republican or Democrat, because Senator Blumenthal will also be joining us
mm-hmm.
on Monday.
Yeah.
It's because Linda McMahon isn't in the media that much. And she is a Connecticut person, originally made her life in the West Hartford area,
yeah.
but of course for many years is in Greenwich,
mm-hmm.
ran for Senate twice, and has now announced that she is the head of the Super PAC on behalf of raising funds for President Trump.
Yep.
That is an interesting guest.
Sure, absolutely. And that her story is, you're right, peel away the politics. Her story of what her and her husband were able to create a worldwide, there would be WWE stuff on other planets if we had gotten there in time. She has done is just a fascinating read to what they've gone through.
It is, and their roots have stayed in Connecticut.
Mm-hmm.
Their WWE headquarters are in Stamford. Their daughter and their son live in Connecticut. Her grandchildren are being educated in Connecticut. Her roots are here. She just left the cabinet position as SBA, and I think it'll be fascinating to find out why she left and what she's up to and why her loyalty is so strong for President Trump. This is what we're going to ask her on Monday.
10 a.m. to noon, the first edition of the Lisa Wexler Show. 10 a.m. to noon, Monday through Friday, kicks off on Monday. Lisa, thank you. Have a wonderful weekend.
Thank Thank you, Paul.
Thanks. Bye-bye. Lisa Wexler, every Monday through Friday, 10 a.m. to noon, right here, right after Tony and Melissa, and right before Clark Howard. And then you have me, and people go, oh, jeez. Republican State Senate member Kevin Kelly joining us from the fine Stratford area. Kevin, how are you, buddy?
I'm pretty good. Yourself?
I'm trying. I'm trying. You a fisherman? Do you fish, Kevin?
I do fish.
Well, you should join our Bluefish. You got to get out there. Weekend of the, who knows? You could win that $25K. There you go.
Yeah, you can.
And then you could put that money toward UConn leaving the AAC. There you go.
Yeah.
Listen, I know that that's something that you and Senator Frisano are not happy about. And you know, Kevin, we've been discussing it here on the show for a couple of weeks. And it's like, you know, yeah, there are fees for entering conferences and fees for leaving, but. I know there's now a question, well, why can't the UConn Foundation raise this money, right?
Yeah. I mean, first and foremost, it's $20 million. I mean, this is, talk about bad decisions. I mean, when Mike Bellamy was on WICC in the morning, I mean,
yeah.
They had bad decisions.
Yeah.
And here you are. Why did they leave the Big East in the beginning? I mean, I know it was to pursue football,
mm-hmm.
But why end up at the, you know, AAC rather than the ACC?
Well, that was, you know, they tried to get into a Power Five, but, you know, yeah, that's been around and around. And, of course, we had our esteemed current U.S. Senator when he was Attorney General file a lawsuit. We know how that worked out, right?
Well, once again, bad decisions.
Yeah.
I mean, the decisions have consequences, and that cost us entrance into the ACC because
yeah.
BC beat us to it.
That's right.
You know, now here we are. We're in the AAC. We don't like it. We want to go back to the Big East. Well, it's $20 million. And it's $20 million at a time when Connecticut taxpayers don't have it.
How many social workers, Kevin, at DCF DMA, the Mental Health and Addiction Services, how many people could we hire for that money?
Certainly. And like I've been pointing out, you know, we couldn't find $19 million in the budget to provide Connecticut residents with at least a 5% reduction in health care premiums. The majority could not find that. The Democrats couldn't find it in the budget. We had the plan, the Connecticut Republicans. And then after the budget was cooked, passed, and signed by the governor, voila, we've come up with $20 million
mm-hmm.
so UConn can leave the AAC and go to the Big East. Well, what about people's health care? I thought that was important.
You know, and Kevin, listen, I've talked about this, and I know it's been an issue up there before because I've heard it from folks like you and other legislators and other staff people. You know, listen, when the Whalers left, you and I both know that was a blow, and UConn, God bless them, they are, for all intents and purposes, with no disrespect to, you know, the Yard Goats or the Sound Tigers or anybody, they're our major league franchise. And I think sometimes, Kevin, and, you know, this is just my feeling, I'm not putting words in your mouth, sometimes we tend to look at UConn, even in the toughest financial times, you know, with rose-colored glasses. And I know I've been told that there's a reluctance up there to actually, you know, put our beloved Huskies on the spot and say, well, wait a minute, where's this money going? Where's that coming from?
Understandable, Paul. And hey, I'm a UConn grad.
I know,
I'm a UConn fan.
Yep.
Certainly, I love the Huskies as much as anyone. However, you do have to start to put things in perspective. I mean, we ushered Tom Diaco to the door, knowing we were going to go with Randy Edsall,
mm-hmm.
and that cost us millions of dollars. And now it appears like we're going to a basketball conference. Well, what's the D1 football going to do?
Yeah.
And it's not so much about our love for the Huskies as much as it's about a government that is out of control, making the wrong decisions, and the government doesn't pay for this. The taxpayers do.
Yeah, because that is all, you know, unless the UConn Foundation raises it, has been suggested. No, it's all in some way, shape, or form, Kevin, revenue that flows through UConn. In the couple of minutes we have left, I want to ask you one thing that's kind of bubbled up again. And obviously, this affects your district. We're seeing yet another idea here in the unending chain of ideas to get a casino in Bridgeport. The governor doesn't seem to be behind it. He was a little miffed, from what I read, that he kind of wasn't, he wasn't really consulted on it. Some sort of thing with the Indians in Bridgeport, plus sports gambling. Another threatened legal action by other parties. Is this rumors of now a special session here? Is this meriting anything, or is this just wishful thinking again?
Well, I think right now you can see that the leadership of the state is not on the same page moving forward, which causes uncertainty, which doesn't really engender either confidence nor the likelihood of success. Hopefully everybody can get on the same page and move forward, because I think when you look at whether it's this or other issues, Connecticut needs to start to put its house of court cards in order so that we can create jobs and get the state back to the prosperous state that it was before. The governor and the chairman of appropriations, who's from Eastern Connecticut, needs to sit down and start to talk and hash through this. We have a longstanding relationship with the tribes, mm-hmm. a successful relationship, but obviously MGM would like to come in. And really what the governor should be doing is getting the stakeholders at the table with the city. And, let's see what happens.
Kevin, is there just a fear, Kevin, that even though the slot revenues continue to trend down and, that may be drying up eventually, is there just a general fear by some people to walk away from the Indian tribe affiliation?
Well, I think you got to go back to the compact. The compact that was the deal that was created by then-Governor Weicker limited revenue to the slots.
Mm-hmm.
I think if we look forward, I think you're going to be looking at a different type of deal, one that might have gaming tables and maybe other sorts of revenue. So I think, once again, it's all going to be the devil in the details, and I think there's more to it, particularly if you look at Bridgeport more like an inner harbor,
yeah.
Than just gaming. There's going to be entertainment. There's going to be restaurants and that, if you create that, then
jobs.
Well, that's what it's all about.
Yeah. Kevin, thank you, buddy. Appreciate it. Kevin Kelly, GOP state senator from Stratford. Kevin, have a great weekend, man. Enjoy the weather.
Hey, you do likewise. I'm looking forward to that Joan Joyce.
Yeah, well, that's Monday at 3. The author will be on. Yes. Remember her growing up, Kevin, watching those games. I'll never forget it. Thanks, buddy.
Absolutely. Take care.
Appreciate it. Thanks. Yeah, Kevin mentioning our guest at 3 o'clock on Monday, an author with a new book about the legendary Joan Joyce, who is still coaching softball. She's at the Florida Atlantic.
Updating you on a story that we talked about. Police in Bloomfield saying the man who killed an escaped cow in a Home Depot parking lot was arrested and charged with animal cruelty. You may remember this happened on July 13th when cops say a cow escaped the Saba Live Poultry, a butcher shop in Bloomfield. Employees from the shop managed to track the cow down. They found it behind a loading dock at the Bloomfield Home Depot. Bloomfield cop officer Brendan Danaher arrived on the scene to see a man try and shoot a bow and arrow at the cow. The guy missed. I'm sorry. It's just the visual there. Stand down, D'Artagnan. Sorry. Danaher said that he then saw three of the employees grabbed onto the cow. He said he thought the employees were going to restrain the animal and said cops say one of the employees pulled out a knife and cut the cow's throat. The employee identified as Badir Mosed. Police body cam footage showing the moments after it all played out. Officer Danaher can be heard issuing a ticket. He wrote him a ticket. Let's see. Hold on to it. Rolling through a stop sign? No. Failed to yield right away? No. Butchering a cow in a public place? Yes. There you go. A spokesman for the shop Saba Live Poultry admitted to Fox 61, their reporter Dave Pugliese, that killing the cow was not the best course of action, but they said in the heat of the moment the employees were trying to get a, quote, dangerous situation under control before matters got worse. He'll be in court later on this month. Okay. Please don't give this guy jail time. This is so dumb. I'm sorry the cow got butchered. All right, but come on. Come on. You can get butchered anyway. I know you shouldn't kill an animal in public, but come on. Good Lord. We're in a society where we... How many babies a week do we butcher in abortion clinics? Right? I'll suck that kid out right there. But no, because this guy butchered a cow, maybe he shouldn't. But come on, people. All right, 203-333-9422. Should this guy go to jail or just pay a fine? It's a butcher shop. I don't know. This joint in Bloomfield, quite an operation here. They concluded that Saba Live Poultry, improperly the state did, I guess the Agriculture Department, concluded that Saba Live Poultry improperly confined and cared for livestock and rabbits, saying they failed to supply such animals with wholesome air, food, and water. Okay. Got that? They noted during the investigation they found approximately, listen to this place, like Noah's Ark. Listen to this. Yes, they found 2,000 poultry. 2,000! Wow, a lot of McNuggets there, huh? 2,000. Oh, come on, you laughed. Don't give me this. How awful he said that. Come on, it's a chicken market, for God's sake. My family had one. They found 2,000 poultry, 30 rabbits, 3 sheep, and 3 goats. Jeez, I'm sorry. It's like Noah's freaking ark. During the investigation, thank you. Can you tell it's Friday at 26? During the investigation, come on, you're laughing. Don't give me, you people listening, please don't give me this garbage. He's making fun of animal cruelty. Stop it. You laughed. During the investigation, I guess maybe while the state inspectors were there, they turned away a shipment of 100 goats and calves. How is this place? This place is like in the middle. Is this place on a field? I mean, I guess it's in it's in a populated area of Bloomfield. I used to work in Bloomfield, by the way. I wonder if I ever drove past this place. 2,000 poultry, 30 rabbits, 3 sheep, and 3 goats. And a partridge in a pear tree. Sorry. They also turned away a shipment of 100 goats and calves. Well, it's a live butcher shop. I mean, Saba Live Poultry. I guess it's kind of like card shopping. You pick out, I'll take that. All right. So there you go. We had quite a discussion on this the first time regarding this butchered cow. So the guy flipped out. They couldn't get the cow back in the shop, and he slit its throat. Well. Maybe it wasn't the best thing to do. Maybe it just wasn't the best thing to do. In the studio, I've got, Aaron's got his computers. I've got a couple of my laptop, a couple of computer monitors, a big screen TV on the wall. So, I'm kind of poking around, seeing what's going on the commercial breaks, just to make sure, I don't miss any big stories for you. And there was a story on, courtesy of our buddies at Channel 8, there was a story regarding a woman, I guess, who she was jogging, right? And apparently she was charged at by a bear when she was jogging. And I said, well, geez, okay. But here's the thing. As I'm puttering around here looking for stories, I'm looking up and I see the bear. I said, wow, that bear is kind of close to her. Yeah. Then you see the bear start to charge. Well, I'm saying, well, wait a minute. Why do we have footage of that? We have footage of that because this woman apparently stopped her jog or turned around to take video of the bear. Now, I try not to freak out at situations. I try to not do anything that is a wrong decision. I try not to do things that in the end will hurt me. But let me tell you this. If I'm jogging and there's a bear about 20 feet behind me, I am looking over my shoulder. And the last thing I'm going to do is slow down, stop, and point my phone at it.
You big cold-blooded dummy.
I'm watching the monitor going, look at that freaking bear. It's pretty close. Wait a minute. She's taking video, or somebody's taking video of the bear, and the bear starts to charge. What is wrong with people? No, I'm honestly, it's just, I'm sorry, folks. It struck me as being a little odd, if you know what I mean. Here's video of that bear charging me. Well, that's probably not. Oh, man. Yeah, Aaron's right here. About 80 pounds lighter, I'd be back to my high school weight, my lot of hair on my head, and boom, you'd be seeing this short, pudgy Italian guy right down the road there. Right? See you later, Smokey. I'm out. Go. I'm gone, baby. Goodbye. If you're gonna have me for dinner, you're gonna have to freaking work at it. You know what I mean? I'll get those guys from Bloomfield, D'Artagnan there with the bow and arrow. I'll get him up here. Put one in your rear end, we'll do that. Yeah. Yeah. Oh man. Oh, you believe? Oh, let me tell you something. I couldn't care less what PETA would think what I would do for an animal. Get out of here, right? But man, it's bad out there, man. And again, I don't know whether this woman was in Connecticut or not, but think of all the bear sightings you hear about now. I mean, one of my former employers, no, I don't have employees, trust me. I don't make that much money. One of my former employers, we had buildings, you know, around campus, and we would almost, I don't want to say daily, but maybe every two or three days in the warm summer months. Oh yeah, by the way, we just saw a bear behind admissions. So you may not want to eat lunch out there. Or there was a bear seen walking across campus. Huh? Excuse me? So the last, and I know what they say, you're supposed to make noise. You know, I love these people too. These experts. God bless them. I know they understand the bear population. They understand the propensity of what to do to make bears run away. But what do they say with a bear? You're supposed to make noise? Is that what it is? Is that what it is, Aaron? You're supposed to, when you see a bear, don't they say to like clap your hands and make noise?
Yeah, you're supposed to apparently stand tall,
Yeah,
my roommate dated a girl that lived up in Salisbury when we were in college, and they had bear sightings all the time. And he was telling me the story about how his ex-girlfriend, her mom, used to just be like, oh, here's a bear. I'm going to go outside and scare it off. Why don't you come out and watch me do it? And he said, with all due respect, ma'am, I'm from New Haven.
I don't do that. What are you, crazy? Why don't you come outside and watch me scare the bear? Okay, Mrs. Shlobotnik, I'll do that after I play another round of Russian roulette. How's that? Hold on. Click, click. No aspersion to this woman or lady. No, listen, I'm sure she was a lovely person. Why don't you come outside and watch me scare the bear? Well, ma'am, part of the reason I'm not going to do that is because eventually, the bear's going to get it. Eventually, the bear's going to say, screw this. You ain't scaring me no more. In fact, you can make all the damn noise you want in the world. You know what? I'm walking toward you. Now what are you going to do? You're clapping and screaming, and guess what? I ain't running anywhere. How's that look now, Wonder Woman? How's that going on for you? Oh, my God. Why don't you come outside and watch me scare the bear. I'll do that right after I check to see if there's any gas in my tank with a match. Hold on. God.